One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today we will be talking about Doctor Who's End of Time. Today I have with me Eric.
Hey.
I have Jeff.
Hello.
And I have the lovely Will.
Hello.
Cue the theme music!
We're just going to talk about how we felt about the episode, our feelings, what we hated, if we hated anything. I'll start it off with saying this is the most powerful episode that I've ever seen. I guess maybe because it's fresh or whatever, but I cried. I was depressed. I felt a little bit of loss. I really allowed myself to get caught up into the story, so I think that's why it had a little bit of a strong effect on me, because I really didn't care about it at first, and then just kind of got sucked in, and I was really broken up about that. Jeff, I saw some of your tweets about it. I want to go with you first. How did you feel about this particular regeneration?
I thought I'd be a lot more emotional about it, but I wasn't. I knew it was coming. I think I just took it as the next chapter starting. Mm-hmm. And one ending and another one starting. I didn't get emotional about it. I got a little sad.
What? No, your tweets were like, oh yeah. My God, and you had all these exclamation points, and you were like really excited, and now you're getting on the podcast talking about, I don't know, I wasn't that excited. What
cool
is that?
There's a lot of cool stuff that happened during the two episodes, or some cool stuff. Mentions of other things. But overall, the main story with the Master was kind of like, I actually saw this from someone. They said it was something like really lame. But the main story was just at the end of like the last 15 minutes of the Doctor saying goodbye to everyone.
So you liked the goodbyes or you did not like the goodbyes?
Yeah, I kind of did. It was kind of cool to see how some of the people turned out, like, what's her name?
Donna,
Martha and Mickey were together. And so I was trying to figure out how are they together, since I thought Mickey was in another universe. Maybe the Doctors went to that universe and helped them out because they were who they were.
Eric, is that true?
Mickey came back to our world in the end of Stolen Earth and remained in our world at the end of Journey's End.
Okay, that's
right.
Then how are the Centaurans there?
The Centaurans, it's not really explained. I left it up to, we don't even know what time period that is. It's either an adventure, it's like an adventure we've never seen, or I don't know. It's not really explained in any way why they're battling the Centaurans.
Speaking of that scene, did anyone notice the hammer the Doctor used?
Hammer?
Yeah, to knock the Centauran out.
Oh.
The air hole.
Oh,
or whatever
yeah, of course. Yeah, the probic vents. Yeah, I noticed it. Yeah, because that's how you kill Centaurans, is the probic, you just smack them on
the
head.
Yeah, but that hammer he had in the TARDIS in an earlier episode. I recognized it. Because they had they were playing old episodes the past 2 days. And I saw that sitting in the TARDIS. And so it's like a rubber mallet with a strap on the end.
Right, right.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's the, he would, in the first season, he would hit the TARDIS control panel at some point. To let it down. Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. I didn't notice that.
They kept all those props lying around, which is nice.
Okay, Will, what were you thinking?
I'm not on the floor like you, but it was funny, it was sad, it was good. It was a good episode in that there was a lot of setup in the first episode, but I liked it because it was like, doctor, here's a doctor, here's a master, here's, you know, Wolf and his friends, here's this, here's that. It wasn't like, okay, this runs into this, and this runs into that, and this runs into that. But it was more of a set up the events, and then have the scene between Wolf and the doctor in the cafe, which is, you know, which was like two really good guys getting to act them out. You know, then you go on to the master and the doctor having a confrontation. Again, two good actors, having it out with these characters. That's more of ultimately what I got from the story, and ultimately what I liked about the story. Speaking of tweets, we passed tweets, and you were talking about how you lost it when the doctor went and looked at all the people and all his companions. I lost it when he opened the envelope and they saw that it was the lottery ticket. And he's the only person in the universe a lottery ticket from is a sure win. It's not, there's nothing left to chance there. It was a really, it was a fun episode. It was ultimately, I've done a little bit extra. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched the Confidential, but I did listen to the podcast between Russell T. Davis and Julie Gardner, basically their last appearance in the show, and they have this thing where he always goes, yes, faithful viewer, thank you for coming in and listening to us today. And it was, I felt kind of, oh, yeah, I have listened to them through every recording they've done for the podcast. And yes, it's been this kind of an intimate relationship. And yes, it's over. And we don't know what's going to happen from now on out. But I'm guardedly optimistic.
Okay, well, but what I'm really trying to get to is, I mean, you didn't feel anything. You didn't feel any loss. You didn't. This wasn't major for you. This was just a regular. I mean, I'm not.
No,
everybody's response to this now is just really.
I think
astounded that you guys are just like, yeah, this is whatever.
It's kind of. Well, look. I mean, I don't want to put it too fine a point on it, but these are all guys. You know, we're, you know, it's, hey, of course, no problem. No, I took it like,
that's
no.
Bull- whatever, no, but okay, no, I'll let you roll
exactly.
With that.
No, I agree with you 100%.
I know, that's Eric's problem, I know for a fact, but...
yeah, obviously. Well, let's
no response,
talk about
no
Eric.
Response. Okay.
I said it's not true.
My last point is, no, I had an emotional roller coaster for that thing, and that scene in the room when Wolf knocks four times, it's like, oh, because he's survived. And he's shocked, and he's so happy, and he's like, "Oh, great! Oh, fun!
Yeah.
Oh, lovely!" And then the knock comes. It's like, and then you see him instantly know everything that's going to happen. Oh my god!
Right there in that moment that his response to that, he had a big major temper tantrum.
Because you had to go in there, didn't you? You had to go and get stuck. Oh, yes. Because that's who you are, Wilfred. You were always this, waiting for me all this time.
Oh, really? Just leave me. I'm an old man, Doctor. I've had my time.
Well, exactly. Look at you. Not remotely important. But me, I could do so much more. So much more! But this is what I get. My reward. But it's not that!
That scene was emotional for me. I wouldn't say I was crying or anything, but it was emotional.
He got choked up a little bit, at least.
Yeah. I mean, when the four knocks come.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because when the four knocks come, he realizes what it is, and you, as the viewer, realize what it is. Because, you know, he's been talking about the four knocks for, you know, four episodes now. And it's like, oh, my God. This is going to be the end.
Did you notice one thing about, like, the drum beats in the master's head and the four knocks? It wasn't just the da-da-da-da. Wilf actually knocked four times, or four sessions of those four beats.
Yes, he sure did. I noticed that.
That was
four times,
four knocks.
Yeah.
Every time there was knocking, it wasn't knocking. Like when the master was banging on the steel drum.
Bum, ba, bum.
And the other drum beats, they weren't knocks. Wilf actually knocked.
It wasn't about the drum beats, it was about a knock. And, you know, and that's like, oh, look, clever little thing. No, it's not, it wasn't a clever thing, but it was something that we didn't realize what they were talking about. And,
until that.
Well, see, the thing is, I think people are missing a lot of stuff. Like, hello, Rashlan? Timothy Dalton was Rashlan? Hello, Rashlan?
I recognized his voice in all the promos. Like, that's Timothy Dalton. What is he doing? And then they actually show him. I'm like,
playing Rashlan. Do we remember who
Rashlan is? Okay, Eric, what's Rashlan? I'm new. I don't know what that means.
Okay. Go back. Watch The Deadly Assassin. Watch Omega. That's the
Five Doctors.
Four Doctors. No. The first Five. One. It's Three Doctors. The first one. Three Doctors, later they did the Five Doctors. The Three Doctors, Omega and the Key to Time, and the whole, that sets up the premise, and then Rassilon comes later. Rassilon was the despot. He was the leader of the Time Lords that tried to enslave time. He tried everything he possibly could and they just barely got him at the end. What's he doing as the president of the High Council? You know, he should not be there. He should never have been there.
Coup d'etat.
Well, yeah. Who said he was 69? I'm like, what? 63? Are you kidding me? 63? Somebody said he was, okay, so he's over 60. My God, I'm thinking, what, 47, 49 maybe? You know, he's good looking. He's a handsome man.
Oh, yeah, he is very handsome. He says Sean Connery handsome that just never goes away. Okay, well, I want to hear from Eric now. Will, I want to hear from Eric now. He's been too quiet. Okay, Eric, what's that then?
What? It feels weird talking about it again since, you know, you just heard me not too long ago.
I always listen to what you say twice because I talked to you on the phone about it, and then so I'm used to it. So go ahead.
I think I probably had it too built up for myself. I really expected to be much more moved by this entire story and the ending and the regeneration. Because I have been very moved by particular episodes during this RTD era that we're in. You know, I was very moved in Father's Day, Parting of the Ways, The Girl in the Fireplace, Human Nature.
Blink.
I love Blink, but I wasn't moved by it. Like, I'm talking about it in an emotional kind of way.
Oh, okay.
And I also like in a misty eye kind of way. And I was also rather moved by the faux regeneration.
I don't understand how this didn't do that for you, though.
Well, you know, that's the thing. And that's a real bummer for me because, you know, I was more moved by the fake regeneration at the end of Stolen Earth. And, that's pretty sad, because that wasn't even a real regeneration. But see, I think a lot of that kind of took the wind out of it, too. The stolen...
What is that? Because I forgot that. What does that mean?
What does what
the
mean?
The fake regeneration. I've heard people talk about that. What was that? Refresh?
Because he was shot by the Dalek, and he was going to regenerate, and it was a cliffhanger, and everyone was pretty flummoxed by it, because we all knew that he wasn't going to regenerate yet, but yet he was about to regenerate. And so for a whole week we were all wondering, what's going to happen here? Is Matt Smith going to come a year earlier than anyone thought? We were all confused. And then when we come back to Journey's End in part two, he just diverts it to his Time Lord head, and he just says, nope, I'm not ready to go yet. And so it was a fake regeneration. So we all knew that he wasn't pretty sure he wasn't actually going to regenerate, but yet the way it was set up and the scene and the fact that he had just come in contact with Rose again for the first time since Doomsday Day and all that, it was much more built up, and I even found that more emotional than this. And that's why, you know, I could be really bummed out about this two-parter we just got, End of Time, because while I like the regeneration, you know, that's the only thing I really like about the entire two-parter, because if you've heard other people's opinions, other especially long-term Doctor Who fans, man, part one is really, really a below-average, bizarre Doctor Who episode, especially for the long-time fan, for the most part. If you've seen
I thought the Master, when he made the Master Race or whatever across humankind, I thought it was whack. I thought it was totally being John Malkovich. It was like, okay, this is the guy we're supposed to be scared of. What he did was really weird, but I don't know. I mean, it was...
That was one of many things, though. That was just like the icing on the cake, I think, for a lot of old school fans, because there's a lot of craziness. Just, I mean, leading up to this episode, we all knew the Master was going to be in it, but we were all wondering how he was going to get brought back or resurrected. And when we saw how it was with the Harry Potter scene, like the Voldemort resurrection scene, that was a bit perplexing, because, as is said on more hardcore Doctor Who podcasts, a common thing that is said is that there's one of the general rules of Doctor Who is there's no magic, meaning that magical things do happen, but there's always some kind of hokey scientific explanation at the end of the day. There's not usually just direct, like, unexplainable magic. And this fell into that unexplainable magic category of what? Like, how did he come back?
Exactly.
There was a potion. And there was a counter potion, and what? Like, that does not sit well with your long-term Doctor Who fan.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and that's just the beginning. And then when I really got turned off was when the Master jumped hundreds of feet into the air.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for no apparent reason. And then I just basically, at that point, when he first leaped into the air, I just shut off my brain from taking it all seriously, and just sat back and just relaxed and stopped. I was like, no, I cannot critique this anymore. I can't judge it. Otherwise, I'll just ruin everything. So I just went along.
But Eric.
And then there's a full cafe scene in part one. Yeah, go ahead.
There was an actual point where the Master, his antics kind of stopped. And there was a point in the story where it got, in the second part of the story, where he just, his yes. wackiness, it just didn't matter. You can like totally...
Yeah.
Put him to the side, and then it's David Tennant's departure. That's the part really that I'm talking about. And I mean, he did not want to die. He threw a tantrum right in the end when he said he was regenerating alone, which I thought was weird. He's like, I don't want to die. I mean, you wasn't pulled in by any of that. None of that did anything for you at all.
Well, see, those are the things that I liked, but it was difficult to like them as much as I should have because of all the ridiculousness that had come before it in the whole story. Cactus people and all, you know, like, those parts are great, but the story was not worthy of those moments, you know? That's the way I felt about it. It just wasn't built up the right way. I think they lost a lot of steam by having this, what are we calling it now? The off-season, the special year. I forget what we're calling it now, but I think it would have worked better for me, like, if he had gone out, like, at the end of Journey's End or something like that. I don't even like that story that much, but I'm more with that story than this story, and I would rather, you know, they just capped off David Tennant's season or era at that time rather than now, because I feel like it's been a slow death now, because we've all been anticipating for so very long.
It's been hard.
It's been so built up. And that's why it was, you know, it would have been awesome, those little vignettes at the end, seeing the old companions, had we not already done it in Journey's End.
That was just more of an episode. It wasn't really a goodbye then, right? I mean, I didn't get that. I didn't even think of that when I saw the movie.
Well, no, I think that as it played out, even though it wasn't said, I think all the companions who caught glimpses of him, they took it as this is like his farewell, the 10th Doctor's farewell. I think they mostly all, you know, took that away from that, it seemed to me. And I don't know. I just think it would have been more powerful had we not already been through Journey's End. And so, I wanted to enjoy it more. I was surprised because I was anticipating, you know, this being a dusty episode, as I like to call it, you know. But it just didn't work for me because of that. But it's okay. I'm not upset. I mean, I could be much more upset. There are other Doctor Who episodes of the new series that I like dislike even more. And it was passable. But you know what? I'm excited about Matt Smith.
Okay, wait. I don't want to wait. Let's not go Matt Smith just yet, because I'm not ready for him. Actually, I want to go with Jeff first on Matt Smith, and then come back around to you on Matt Smith. Did you think, Jeff, that Matt Smith, it was good to like thrust him in at the end of the episode, and after we've went through such an emotional, I guess, you know, joyride with the Doctor and he's dying and we're sad, that they should have thrown him in like that? Do you think it was too much? Do you think it was the right amount? Well, I mean, what did you think about that entrance?
I'm not sure if it was too much, not enough, just the right amount. I think they kind of put that in there as kind of like a comic relief to all the sadness that previously happened. When he popped in there, he came and he's making sure he's not a woman. He's upset that he's not redheaded. He says Geronimo, which is going to be his catchphrase, I guess.
We have to write letters about that, because that's not going to do for me.
Yeah, we got to.
No, I don't think it will. And I watched some of the, they had a preview of season 5. BBC America had it across motherfuckers. He says it in there too, so we know it's going to be his catchphrase. He's wearing bow ties.
Hopefully, only for the
I hate bow ties.
God damn it! I mean, his neckwear is unacceptable.
Will, what did you think about Matt Smith?
That little bit after everything after the Doctor said, "I don't want to go," was written by.
RTD?
David Moffat.
Oh.
David, not David.
Oh, yeah.
No, Moffat. It was
Stephen Moffat.
Moffat, right.
Wait,
right.
Did they say that in the commentary that it was written by?
Literally in the commentary, yes. They said everything after that point was written. He said, I should have put that in, that it was him writing that. Because if you look at it, that is all, that's a microcosm of how the character is going to be played. And I was not bowled over. I'm like going, oh, yeah, Geronimo, no. So I'm a lot less excited about him. But then again, looking at the the preview piece, it's kind of like the switch between, you know, when John Pertwee came in, the idea of it's an all-action Doctor. And it's kind of, that seems to be his approach more. Seems to be more, you know.
Matt Smith is more
let's
action?
Make this Doctor. Well, yeah, hands-on in there, jumps into the fray, you know, leads without first considering what he's doing and everything. And that was, you know, I can look at that and go, well, yeah, maybe, okay. But I'm not as excited about him as I was, you know, 48 hours ago, or 72 hours ago.
Wow.
But having said that, I mean, see, I'm the Doctor Who fan. I'm the guy who takes what he can get. See, I'm the guy who went out and sought out these shows on the computer when I could have watched it on BBC America. Why? I'm insane.
Do not
know this going in.
Admit to any crimes on this show, sir. We don't want to know that.
No. Well, okay, let me say, I have a very close friend who got these.
Okay, yeah. Eric, let's hear what Eric wants to say about Matt Smith. I really want to hear this, so go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm down with Matt Smith, like, right now. That's the saving grace. That's why I'm not upset about this not being a great episode for me, because, just judging from the little bit at the end of End of Time, I was unsure, cause, you know, it was real quick. But after I saw that clip that's out there, that kind of sold me right there. I mean, I realize it's just a real quick action cut, edited kind of piece, but no, I saw little glimpses in there that just, I'm thinking, wow, I think I'm really, really, really going to enjoy number 11. And I did not have this, and while I like David Tennant's run as a whole as the Doctor, and I like his Doctor, I was not fond of him or keen to him when he first regenerated at the end of Parting of the Ways, when we first saw David Tennant.
That's because Christopher Eccleston is so hot. Okay, I'm stopped. I'll stop.
Christopher Eccleston, I don't know.
I love his ears.
But Eccleston is one of my favorite portrayals of the Doctor, for sure. He's in my top two, I think. But
so what was it about Tennant?
What was what about Tennant?
That you wasn't that sure.
Well, first of all, he was much more unknown to me. I mean, even though Matt Smith is a relative unknown now, David Tennant I had never heard of, period, at the time, and back in, you know, 2005. But let's see, Goblet, but I didn't know who he was when I saw Goblet of Fire. He was just some random actor to me. I didn't.
So is Matt Smith.
You know.
Oh my god.
I know. That's what I was just saying though. But look, when I saw David Tennant in Goblet of Fire, that didn't even factor in because I didn't even realize. So that was a non-factor. So I just saw David Tennant and that was it. Barcelona. You know, teeth. You know, that's all I had to go on. But Matt Smith, I've seen, you know, promo pics galore at this point. You know, I just seen the promo. I've seen him interviewed, talking about being the Doc. That's already much, much, much more. I've already been aware of his face for a year now.
You're just saying that you are more prepared because you have more access to information and fandom and stuff. You've been bombarded with Matt Smith.
Yeah,
because
it would be different. It would be different if I didn't already know about his costume, his possible Doctor's demeanor. I've said it before, I believe. I am super excited about the assumed retroness that we're going to get with the 11th Doctor, like the presumed retroness. I'm extremely excited about that. So these are a lot of things I'm looking forward to that I think are going to be in the new series. See, that's a ton of information right there. Like, I had none of that with David Tennant. All I had with David Tennant was just that, you know, 15 seconds or however long it was. And that's it. I had nothing else to go on at all. I didn't know what was going to happen or anything. But I'm just super excited about this new era coming. And
I think you've already moved on then. And you just...
And like I said, this protracted year of specials and gaps. Gap year specials, that's what we call them.
Gap year specials.
Like, I think that's just taken the wind out of the sails for me. And that's why I regret that David Tennant, for me, I regret that David Tennant, who was one of my above average doctors, went out, in my opinion, in a below average kind of way, because this just wasn't a great year. It wasn't a great 12-month experience for me at all.
No.
You know, I got abused with the season 4 finale. I got abused with the next doctor. I got abused with Planet of the Dead. And Waters of Mars was okay.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'm battered at this point.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Apparently.
I know, Will.
And I'm just...
Let me get a comforter.
A cup of tea.
Sit down, relax.
I know, this massages his shoulders.
What can I help you with?
I don't know. I felt when I was watching it and then Matt came on the screen, I felt like it was too much. I was not finished mourning the death of the 10th Doctor, and he's, you know, exploding. The TARDIS is on fire. You know, he just whimpered that he did not want to die, and I have my tissues. I'm pulling tissues. I'm crying. And I'm serious. I was just a total girl on that episode. And then here I come,
you know,
this bouncy guy, young dude. Oh, Ginger, blah, sip it down. I'm not a girl. And I'm like, dude, I don't want to hear what you're saying right now. I think you're great, but right now you're too much, you know?
Do you know what you needed, Kat? Kat, do you know what you needed?
What did you need?
What?
You needed some adipose to snuggle with.
Some who what now?
Adipose
to snuggle with.
What is that?
Those little guys.
Those little fat guys. I got enough of my own. I don't need those. Anyway.
Cute.
No, but another thing too, Kat, though. Like, this is only like your second regeneration, right?
Yeah, I guess it is. It was new to me. I mean, because Chris, he was only there for 1 year. And so I was a little upset, but I was upset over a longer period of time, and then I got over it. But David Tennant has been my doctor for four years.
Four.
And that's a long time to really get used to someone and not have seen the originals, because, you know, this is just where I started. And so it's kind of like how
I was.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was much more alarmed with my first regeneration that I ever experienced, because that too came for me after, well, three or 4 years, depending on how you look at it. The transition from Dr. 5 to Dr. 6, that was my first, and that was very alarming to me, because, like you, 5 had been my only doctor up to that point, and I didn't want to see him go. I wanted him just to stay and not go anywhere, and at the very end, 6 just pops up, and yeah, that was alarming. That was distressing. It was not a good time.
So you kind of see where I'm coming from.
Well, yeah, of course, but I'm just saying, though, but once you go through it, and, you know, I've seen all the regenerations, or at least what you can see of the first two, because they don't exist fully anymore. Well, anyway, but I've seen them all, you know, now, so, you know, this is literally the, 10th for me, and the 5 to 6 one is very good, in my opinion. It's a good story and regeneration, good setup and regeneration. Obviously, I like 9 to 10's regeneration already, and I also think 4 to 5 is pretty good too, when you think about Tom Baker and his long reign and it came to an end. So, I mean, this has a lot to compare itself to, you know, as far as being moving and impactful, you know. So, you know, it's hard, I guess. I don't know. Let's see how you feel after, like, once you get to Regeneration 10, you still feel the same as your first, you know.
Yeah, so Well, Matt's only doing it for a year, right? Kidding!
Oh,
well,
better not. Well, better not. I will torch the BBC.
Sorry. Oh, my God. Wow. Well, you've seen a lot of regenerations, right?
I've seen them from John Pertwee to Tom Baker to
How did this one add up?
This was the first time the doctor received a fatal dose of radiation and had the time to go out and, as he says in the story, get his reward. He never got the chance ever to go back and repeat things or stuff. The regeneration to Tom Baker, it was a similar addition. He got doses of radiation, but he needed help to start the regeneration process.
Let me hear from Jeff then. How many regenerations have you had, sir?
This would have been the second.
Oh, okay. You're like me.
Like you.
What do you think then? Just like a newbie like me.
I've been thinking about it. I was like, why was it so violent? Why did the TARDIS go all crazy and burn and fall
because
apart?
They're going to be redoing it for Matt Smith, and they needed an excuse.
Yeah, well, just now I was thinking about listening to everyone, and it's like, now I just lost my concentration.
I'm sorry.
mostly because I think the doctor, or David Tennant, he didn't want to die, so he kind of regenerated very violently, trying to stop it, I guess. So that's probably why I think the TARDIS.
I actually think that is part of it. I mean, I actually think that's part of where they're going with that. And yeah, every single regeneration has been unique in its own way and brought its own thing. It's never been consistent ever. There's always new elements brought into the fold. And I kind of think that's what's going on. It has something to do with Ten really not wanting to go. And I think that's why it was much more explosive. I'm thinking that they will explain it to some degree come the next premiere.
I think they're probably going to.
Who was the woman?
I think we're going to.
Who was the woman?
This is my question, yes. Who was the woman?
I've heard several
theories. I'm asking for opinion.
At least we find out that she is a Time Lord of some kind.
Yes.
Well, okay, I've got three possibilities here. Three possibilities, and they're all rather hokey, but please bear with me.
Uh-oh.
One, it's Leela. Anybody remember Leela?
Eric?
Yeah, of course, but...
Leela, explain that, because I don't know what that means.
Okay, all right. Leela was the Doctor's companion. He went back to Gallifrey in the Deadly Sat. No, it wasn't Deadly Assassin, it was the other one. It was the Sun...
What did
Sundarin
she do?
Invasion?
Here, I'm going to send you guys a list of characters. There's a list of characters right that I sent for the cast from one of the wiki pages on it.
Okay.
And I've been trying to figure out who this person is.
Okay.
Well, we found out that she was a doctor's...
I'm sorry?
We figure out that she's appearing on the TV, but then we see that she's actually a Time Lord. So I've been going through this list of the cast members, so I'm trying to figure out who that person was. And all I think, actually, I see right here, is just she's just credited as the woman.
Oh.
Right. Which is...
And it's Claire Bloom.
Okay. So it's either... So in my plots, it's either Leela... Who is the Doctor's companion who is left on Gallifrey to marry an acolyte, a guard.
Okay.
And this was, you know, in the past. Leela. Okay.
Okay, Eric says outside, no on Leela.
Okay, second chance, second possibility, Romana Tretelundar.
Romana, I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
Yeah, many people and have suggested that.
And I think that my money's on Leela, but the other one was, and I like this... The concept of this is that was Leela, that was the Doctor's mother.
I also thought that.
That one's been said the most, that it is his mother. And as was said on the other podcast we were on, like if you listen to the commentary, which I did not listen to, but from what I understand, if you listen to the commentary, the co-producer, I can't think of her name right now, Russell T. Davies is partner in crime.
Gardner. And
yeah, her. Gardner. Yes. Supposedly she says on the commentary that it's supposed to be his mother. But RTD says he will not say, so he will not
Why, though, Eric? No, why does this woman need to be such a mystery? It is irritating, and it's not even really necessary for a wacky story like this. You said it was a mediocre story at best, so I don't understand.
Well, my little theory is, my own little pet theory that I haven't said yet anywhere, is that I think it might have been suggested, it might have been a suggested character by Stephen Moffat to RTD to insert in the story, in order to set something up that we will see coming in the future. That's my guess, because there's a bunch of things going on. There's a few things going on there. For one thing, she's one of the two people who's hiding her face like a weeping angel.
Right.
And we all know that the angels will... Spoiler alert. Yes, she's one of the two.
I'm so excited. What is this spoiler? Oh, my God. What? Are they connected, the angels and the Holden Eye Time Lords? Is that a real thing?
Yes.
Well, maybe.
I was going to say yes. Yeah, well, let me finish,
I'm so excited
everyone.
Right now. Okay.
Okay. Because those of us who have all seen the clip, and it was pulled for me like how many weeks ago, the Weeping Angels are going to return in the next series, which is being referred to as Series 1. But it's also Series 5, and it's also Series 31. So call it what you want. But anyway, so Series 1, 531, we all know the Weeping Angels are going to return. Ras Salon, a.k.a. Timothy Dalton, he says near the end there something about... I have only watched it once, but I need to go back. He says something specifically about... I'm going to do something, I'll make you something... Yeah, like the Weeping Angels of whatever... Now, he didn't say they were Weeping Angels directly, but he mentioned the Weeping Angels as we see them making the pose of the Weeping Angels. and he made it sound like the Weeping Angels, it's like a form of punishment of some kind for whoever became the Angels. So there's definitely some connection. I mean, people have been speculating maybe they're fallen Time Lords or, you know, something to that effect. But anyways, he sets up the connection right there. We know they're returning. They're Stephen Moffat's pet character from Blink. There's some kind of connection there. And it wouldn't be the first time either that Stephen Moffat has asked RTD to do something in one of his scripts, because in the fourth series episode, The Doctor's Daughter, with Georgia Moffat, the episode with the aliens with the water tanks on their faces, where Martha Jones gets back with David Tennant, and, you know, that's the Doctor's Daughter episode, and they make the clone of the Doctor's Daughter. Well, originally, in that script and in that story, her character was supposed to die, and that was supposed to be it at the end of that episode, the Doctor's Daughter and his clone. But Stephen Moffat specifically asked RTD, wait a second, could you just make it so that at the end that she's still around, you know, in some way? Because I'd really like to use her during my turn when I take over. So he specifically requested that they had that little scene at the end of the episode where she, like, her eyes open and she gets back and she gets in a spaceship and she takes off. That was a specific request so that he could use it later. So I wouldn't be surprised if this here is another one of those, hey, could you maybe put this in for me? Because I'd like to, you know, revisit this. And who could she be? You know, as Will said, Leela, I don't think so. Romana, a lot of people suggested. Possible, but I have a feeling if it was Romana, they would have said, like, or somehow explicitly shown that it was her. Many people have said it could be his mother, and, you know, as we just went over. Some people have said it could be Susan, the Doctor's granddaughter in the very beginning.
Damn it, I forgot about her.
Oh!
Yeah, many people were suggesting that. I don't know. Whoever it is, I don't know. But I feel very strongly that this will be revisited at some point. This is not just going to go away. This has to be a teaser of some kind, a plot teaser. So, you know, I'll just wait for this to unfold, this particular thing.
And the woman was, they had two of the people next to Rosalind weeping next, or kneeling next to him. And when the Time Lords took the vote to either rise or fall again, they said everyone voted for it to rise again, except for two. And I think those two people that were standing next to Rosalind were those two people that didn't want to rise again.
Oh, interesting.
And they were,
I don't know,
crying for the fate of the Time Lords.
My question is, why would this lady do
all this? They'll become the Angels.
Why would she do all this talking to Wilf, and she can communicate with him, but she can't communicate with the Doctor? Why wasn't she communicating with him or Donna or someone? I mean, I don't understand why she would go through all the trouble, and she can't communicate. The other person can't communicate. Lord President can't communicate or didn't communicate. She knew how to contact these people all this time, and all she would do is some weird...
I think it was the connection with Wolf and David Tennant. David Tennant's Doctor, actually being one that gets him to... Not actually gets him to die or kills him, but puts him on that path to actually dying. Donna couldn't do it because supposedly her brain would fry... But we found out that it was some kind of defense mechanism for later, which appeared in part two of this. Everyone else has moved on or something, so Wilf was kind of like the only companion around at the time.
Yeah, but why didn't he contact her directly?
Why didn't the
woman contact 10th Doctor directly? I mean, I don't understand the go around.
No, yeah.
No. But why would she want to do that, though? Like, let's just say she could.
Well, he would listen to her because obviously, when he saw her, he recognized.
Like, listen to her when she tells him you need to kill yourself. I mean, what is he going to listen to? You know, I think she's just working in the way Time Lords work.
So she knew that he must die.
No, I don't.
Yeah, that's the yes, that's the way I take it. Is that?
Well, I guess you're right.
He must die, and this is the way it's going to go, and that Wilf is going to be the person involved in that. And so she's just basically kind of guiding Wilf just a little bit at a time, pointing him in the right direction, you know, just to make events work out, I guess, the way, for whatever reason, these are unexplained things, but for whatever reason, she sees it, this is the way it needs to play out. And so I think she's just kind of guiding her hand and without being directly involved, which is what happens a lot. I mean, it's no different from Spock Prime in the Star Trek movie. You know, he doesn't want to directly, why did he just tell Kirk, you know? Well, no, because he had his own design. And,
well, that
know,
makes sense. How that you makes want sense, to- because you don't know what's going to happen if you tell him, but it's a Time Lord talking to a Time Lord. It's not, you know, these aren't humans, these are Time Lords. They have a relationship to time and how, you know, how everything goes, and the fact that they can see all the myriad possibilities when these things turn up. That's why they are Time Lords.
So they still exist, but they exist in a bubble or something. So they're not dead. They
Time Lord history. Gallifrey is in a time bubble, which is the last moment, which was an interesting point of view. But yeah, but it's they're sealed off from everything. I don't get how she was able to contact him, anyone, Will, for anyone, from the other side of the time bubble. It didn't make sense. I understood how they got out of the time bubble, which was a really pretty good idea. But, you know, great, fine, great. How did she get out first to warn Wilf? That could be part of what is explored later on in the story.
What do you think about, Eric? What were we going to say?
You just remembered something that I had thought about before, and I was thinking that, okay, because the Time Lords and Gallifrey, what's left of it, are in some kind of time bubble or whatever, and that opening scene of part two where they're having, when he walks in, Timothy Dalton, and they have their little meeting, their little powwow and all that, that scene was actually taking place, like, if you look at the Doctor's lifetime, it was it wasn't the beginning of the Time War. It was near the
it was
end.
Happening
it was near
prior
the very
to
end of the time.
The Master getting the drums in his head? Is that
it was right before they fell.
Oh, no. Yeah. Let's not get into the drums. That gets way confusing.
Okay.
I mean, let's keep that out of it for a second. But this is actually happening either during the Eighth Doctor's lifetime or right at the very beginning of the Ninth Doctor's lifetime.
Oh.
So just in my mind, I was thinking, wow, while this is happening, either Paul McGann or Christopher Eccleston is out there running around right now, because when they're talking at the table, they're talking about the Doctor's going to do it. He's going to end this. Da, 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 da.
True.
So that means, so this is at the near the end of the war. No one knows exactly when the Doctor regenerated from 8 to 9, but everyone just assumes it's perhaps when he, you know, killed his people. That's perhaps what caused him to turn into 9. And so I'm thinking 8th Doctor's running around somewhere, because that's when that is actually happening, and that's when they're having this discussion, is actually in a whole different time than when everything else that we see is taking place. It's just they jump into and affect the future, and because then that's when they came up with the whole plot, and that's
what,
when they retroactively put the sound.
Yeah,
the
what's the diamond thing though? What I didn't even get that. I in a story format it worked. I was like, whatever. They just throw a diamond to a picture of Earth rotating, and then okay, whatever. But how does that even work? It didn't make sense to me.
I have no idea. It's Time Lord magic. It's just
vibrate. No,
it's just it was just a convenient plot device, something they could get the Master's attention with, and you know, help him.
And they used the signal from the past, amplified through the diamond to open the gateway, so they could come through.
No, I got that, but
I
how
mean,
does that work?
It's funny. No,
was the diamond
no
ever
magic? Oh, magic. Okay. Well, then Eric said that there's never been any like magic in Doctor Who. It's always been kind of logical.
Yeah. Well, 90% of it. Yeah. There are little nitpicks where you could find the silly magic here and there. Yeah, but I'm like,
how
I'm
does
this all that, right?
work?
I mean, because it's awesome.
Right.
It's full of awesome.
And actually, to try and understand the whole sound of drums thing, meaning like how did they retroactively during the Time War went back, threw it into the Master's mind when he was a child, which obviously happened who knows when in the past. That's all very Bill and Ted's. I think it's from is it Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey? It's, if you remember, I think it's the second Bill and Ted's movie. If you remember near the end,
excellent.
Where Bill and Ted get, when they get, like,
we should
locked
go
up in there and, like, the...
Learn.
Yeah.
Hey. When you can control time, you can do whatever you want.
Right? I'm just trying to do my Bill and Ted impression.
I know.
It's like,
Whoa.
He's like, Neo, dude, if we go back and last week, I could, you know, it's like, really? That's how it works now? That's how I'm. And that's how it works with Doctor Who.
Apparently. They went, well, they went, they walked through and they go, hey, we should learn this stuff. They went back, they went out in the time machine, they came back, they were the musicians.
Exactly. And that's essentially what Rassilon and the Time Lords did. Is like, well, next week, I'm going to go back into the past and put the sound of the drums into the Master's head so that now you will have it and yada, yada, yada.
So actually, all he was hearing was his heartbeat. I don't get why he didn't get that.
Well, it's not that he was hearing his own heartbeat, but he was hearing a persistent message that, because they were just using that, which is the Time Lord heartbeat, but they were using that as a message to insert in his, right. So it wasn't that he was just hearing his own heartbeat, but he was, that's like me saying you're going to hear a human heartbeat, not necessarily your heartbeat, but you're going to have that rhythm in your brain for
some the next 2,000 years.
It's like, I thought that was kind of like, the Edgar Allan Poe's The Tale of the Bell Tolls Heart, or whatever it's called.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yes. You're going to hear those four beats in your head for the next 2,000 years. Hello.
Or ever. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even want to get into the nitty-gritty of the entire episode. There's so many little points we could all pick at. Like, the doctor said he was like 900 and whatever at some point.
906 years old.
I've said this before in other podcasts, Doctor Who recordings, that's just a bunch of hokey because the doctor's been saying he's been 900 and something for like the last three regenerations. I think it's just one of those people who likes to say they're forever 21.
That's no one on this podcast. Everyone tells the truth about their age.
Yeah, and I think the doctor, he's been doing that for the last 200 years of his lifetime. He doesn't want to say he's over 1,000 because he's got to be well over. It's been too long, 900 and something. And it's ridiculous. So.
Why do you gotta call a man out like that? He just died. Let him have.
Well, he's always been saying he's 903, and then at the part when they're on the Vinvachi spaceship above Earth, he says he's 906 years old.
Yeah, but see, he's been saying it though.
Saying
3 years. Yeah, 3 years.
For 3 years.
But the 9th, the 8th, the 7th have been saying since I can't remember somewhere around the 7th or 6th, he got up into the 800 range, and he's just been stuck there for a long time. So, yeah, whatever. But I'm just saying, yeah, there's plenty more I could nitpick into the story, and we could discuss every little morsel, every little callback, because there's actually much more than we're really getting into today. But
yeah.
I'm too tired for it, really.
I know. I mean, just... Yeah, Eric has to go to work, we're going to have to wrap it up. Let's get some final thoughts.
Oh, that's fine. I didn't even...
What?
I didn't even mean in this conversation. I just meant in general.
Oh.
I've already
put the wrap up out there, so let's do it. We're going on into an hour. Will, final thoughts.
David Tennant. He was a doctor. I mean, that's it. And he was probably the best, certainly the best in the modern era, probably second best in my estimation. And let's look for Matt Smith. See what we're gonna get.
Jeff.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I'm stuck with David Tennant in my head as the Doctor. I don't know how I'll take to Matt Smith playing the role. I'll watch the episodes and then see if I get hooked or not. I still have a lot of questions about David Tennant's Doctor's character from the End of Time episodes that I need answered. Or talk about. I don't know. I'll see how it goes with Matt Smith. I really do not want to give up David Tennant.
Me either.
How dare he want to do all this stuff in his career?
I know!
Bastard!
Eric!
Yeah, you know, farewell David Tennant. I wish it was a good run. I wish it could have ended better or more to my liking, but oh well, and you know, hello, Matt Smith. I look forward to it. I look forward to when the actual season starts up and we get, you know, weekly episodes. And I can't wait to talk about it in the future on this podcast. I look forward to it greatly.
What is that, by the way?
Also, they just say it's spring. And it's gonna be, he's gonna have to somehow dodge the Olympics and somehow dodge the World Cup in,
oh, yeah,
in the summer.
Yeah.
So they're gonna have to weave it somewhere nicely in between there. And also, on a production note, I've been working on putting out a feed for my old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse.
In which he's never played on here, which I've asked him to play on here several times.
But it never seemed like there was an appropriate place
whatever
to feed my little guide to the Whoverse. Maybe I'll throw one in at the end of this episode.
Hint, yes, thank you. So people can know what
but
you're
I was
talking about.
Yeah, I was listening to a different podcast called Bridging the Rift last night, and they were talking about my little thing, and it was that's the little thing that pushed me over the edge.
It was your diamond to earth moment.
I have to thank Nat, who's at 36 on Twitter. He's the one who, you know, I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. So that'll be hitting the feeds at some point.
We'll be looking forward to that, Eric. And my final thoughts is I'm going to miss David Tennant. I cried for you, man. You did a great job. It was beautiful. I do look forward to Matt Smith. I'm excited about him. You know, I hope he does a good job. So that's going to wrap up our show.
God bless the cactus.
That's racist!
Smooth skid faster.
SciFiPartyLine.com 773-336-2686. See you at the party next time. Bye.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. Editor-in-Chief Esco, a.k.a. The Bachelor. Entry number 072006.01. Subject, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a wholly remarkable book, perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book to ever come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. It's already supplanted the Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom. This is not that book. Rather, what you have now accessed is the hardly comparable, shamefully inadequate, and grossly inaccurate Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse. In this periodical, we shall attempt to make a rather minuscule dent into the voluminous history and expansive world of Doctor Who. Stay tuned to this podcast feed for further excerpts and excursions into this great, witty, self-praising, horribly less than concise volume. Disclaimer, please send all your answers and complaints to our desperately understaffed editor at guidetothewhoverse@gmail.com or on MySpace at myspace.com/guidetothewhoverse. Oh, and one last thing. The accent? It's totally fake.
Hey everyone, this is Eric. That was my Hitchhiker's Guide to the Whoverse, episode 1. Bear in mind that it was produced back in 2006, so any of those links or whatever mentioned, yeah, just disregard all that. If you'd like to hear more of it, you can find more information and the feed over at guidetothewhoverse.libsyn.com, or you could follow us on Twitter. That's at HHG2W on Twitter. And that's about it. Let's see. What say we trot out now to a cut by everyone's favorite trot band, Chameleon Circuit. For those who don't know, trot stands for Time Lord Rock. And this is one of their favorite songs of mine. It's called Gallifreyan History 101.
All right, class. I'm the professor. I'm going to be giving you your lecture today. Now, just so that we're all clear, this is Gallifreyan History 101, so please make sure you're in the right class. There's always one, isn't there? Right, for the rest of us, we've got a lot to cover, so let's get started. At first, we were just Gallifreyans, and that was fine. Just taking up space and biding our time. Until Rassilon came along, with his ever-present sense of right and wrong. He was strong, he was mighty, he was the founder of Time Lord Society. Now this is the subject that everybody finds the hardest, but you're gonna have to pass it. interstellar science woot a major. He found our source of power and devised a cunning plan in under an hour. It went sour, he was erased, but at least now we could travel through time and space. Now, if there's a subject that's impossible, it's this. Just fine. We're traveling through space, bouncing through time. But we've made it clear not to interfere, and that's a rule to which we all must adhere. But I fear that the duck is about causing havoc in his big blue box. Now that takes us up to date, and everything is just crazy. By Russell T. Davies. Nobody's graduating from this academy until you all master to be a galibrian. Until you can say you're a galibrian. Until you know all about galibrian history. Right, same time next week.
I don't want to go. Eyes, two nose. I've had worse, chin. Blimey. Hair. I'm a girl.
No.
No. I'm not a girl. No. I'm still not ginger. And something else. Or something important. I'm...